The concerns about the Boston Redevelopment Authority come during one of the most dynamic eras in the city's architectural history, driven in part by rapid population growth.
There are more than 70 large construction projects underway in the city right now, most of them residential buildings. About 8,000 new apartments are expected to be ready in the next 3 years.
And Boston's skyline is on the verge of change, with 5 skyscrapers in the works, all of them taller than 60 stories. That means taller than the Hancock Building and the Prudential. How will another wave of modern architecture affect a city that cherishes its history? Is Boston ready for a new skyline, and how will these major projects change the city itself? With us to consider those questions is Mike Davis. He's an architect and principal at Bergmeyer Associates in Boston and a co-chair of the Boston Civic Design Commission. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And also joining us in the studio is Brian Sermon, an architectural historian and lecturer at Boston University. Welcome to you, Brian.
Thank you.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Are you ready for big and tall changes around the city of Boston? Do you welcome those changes and projects, or do you worry that Boston could lose a little of its charm? Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also share your comments on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Let's start with the new towers, some just being planned, some are already under construction. Mike, could you describe a couple of the projects that have really gotten your attention?
Well, first, let me say that I'm very excited that we're having a full-throated public conversation about architecture. I think architecture is really important, and I love the passion that I see now and in the criticism and the commentary and the debate, and it's about time. This is a really important subject. You know, I think that we have seen several of what I would consider very good projects in recent years, and I think that we may want to actually spend a little time and define what we mean by good or progressive architecture. But I would look at the Isabel Stewart Gardner Addition. I would look at the East Boston Public Library, the MIT Media Lab, the Berklee College Tower, the Mass College of Art Tower. You know, I think these are really, really, by my definition, good, interesting, progressive buildings. I would point out that they're not commercial buildings. You know, it's harder to get progressive, interesting, excellent architecture in commercial buildings. It's easier when it's an institution that's building, or a cultural institution that's building, or an educational institution, or a public institution. The math is different. You know, the value proposition is different. But good architecture is happening in the city.
Mike, what is your view of some of these new towers that are coming? Are they well placed? Are these the kind of projects that you expect to be pleased with?
Yeah. Well, I think it's fair. I think it's fair to say, I mean, someone said it was relentlessly B-plus architecture, you know, and I think that the high-rises we're seeing are not going to be Boston's best project, but I think what we're doing is we're forming a public realm that I think is very, very good. And I think one of the things we have to focus on is that part of the function of architecture is kind of an equitable support of vital human functions and the creation of good spaces and good places. You know, it's the places in between the buildings, the streetscapes and the parks, and how human needs are met. That matters a lot. I mean, that's a different conversation than the aesthetic conversation. So I guess I've sort of, hedged that answer a little bit.
Brian Sermon, from a historical perspective, how does this current wave of construction fit in, say, compared to the 60s and 70s when we saw a different kind of boom?
I think historically Boston has seen a persistent tension between, on the one hand, progressive and innovative architecture, and on the other hand, architectural sensibilities that are more conservative, more parochial. So we have, at times in our history, great pioneers in architecture and design working and living in the city, people like Charles Bulfinch, H.H. Richardson, Gropius, Sert, Coleman McKinnell. And at other times, we have Boston's architectural taste that run the gamut from the dowdy to the banal. And in the 60s and 70s, we had a tremendous infusion of great modernist architecture in the city. Ada Louise Huxtable, the longtime critic for the New York Times and subsequently the Wall Street Journal, said that Boston was not only the cradle of liberty, but it was also the cradle of modern architecture in America. And I think that, she was right in pointing out that about that era in the city's development history. But very soon after that, I think we got a, sort of a knee-jerk reaction against progressivism, against distinctive design. And I think many of the buildings that have gone up in the last 20 or 30 years are characterized more by their banality, more by their anonymity than by their architectural quality. So I think Boston right now is really at a crossroads, and I'll be interested to see whether Boston takes advantage of this opportunity and swings the pendulum back towards more distinctive, innovative, world-class quality architecture, or whether we continue along the path of anonymous high-rise banal boxes.
As a casual observer of the skyline, like, you know, most greater Bostonians are, I find myself wondering if some of the newer projects are sort of they feel derivative of the Hancock Tower in a way that we've ended up with this wall-to-wall glass exterior. Is that sort of the downside of having an innovative project and then seeing sort of knockoff versions pop up, or am I misreading that?
I don't think they're necessarily derivative of the Hancock. I just think they're a focus of the economies of building very large buildings in a very expensive place, you know, with a lot of capital at risk. And I think that there are other cities. When you travel, you go to other cities, London and Sydney and Barcelona and New York, where you see that they've managed to actually reward risk. I mean, you know, the municipal authority has actually taken steps to make risk, design risk, more valuable. And that's, I think that's how you produce these days. You produce, interesting, risky, forward-looking commercial architecture is by rewarding risk. And I don't think we've figured out how to do that in Boston yet.
What's your response to that, Brian?
I think Mike's absolutely right, and he hit the nail on the head in pointing out the risk here. I think there's a great deal of timidity in Boston. A lot of the designs that are going up now are more concerned with being inoffensive, with not being controversial, than they are with making a forward-thinking architectural statement. Boston likes to conceive of itself as a cosmopolitan, progressive city, and yet these are characteristics that aren't reflected in recent architecture. So when I have friends come visit from Europe and I show them around, they're amazed, they're mystified that the most avant-garde buildings are ones that are generally 30, 40, 50 years old, and they look at the recent stuff and yawn. They say, where is Boston's equivalent of, say, Beijing's CCTV headquarters, or Boston's equivalent of London's The Shard? Where's Zaha Hadid? Where's Calatrava? Yeah. Where's the young, obstreperous, iconoclastic architect no one's ever heard of yet who can lead Boston into the architecture of the future?
Right. Well, they're doing multi-unit housing projects down in Jamaica Plain and Dorchester and on Washington Street, and they're working for the universities, on small projects. So, but they're not doing the big commercial buildings downtown. No, they're not. I want to make a point here. I think we yearn for magazine cover design excellence sometimes at the expense of public benefit. And I think we have to be sure we balance those things. I think a city doesn't want a lot of buildings that are making grand statements and not actually delivering a public benefit. So let's be careful here. I also want to talk. My favorite story right now is a project that's going up in Midtown Manhattan right now. I don't know if you guys know it. It's on West 57th Street, and it's called W57. It looks to all the world like a stealth bomber parked on its edge. It's a remarkable project, but you can see, if you just look at the context, what happened was somebody in a position of authority said, okay, we'll give you an extra 30 or 40 stories here if you do something remarkable, and that was the deal that was made. And that requires, actually, to go back to the conversation about the BRA, that requires someone in a position of authority to actually make a deal like that with a commercial developer and say, okay, we'll let you break outside of your box, we will give you some more height or some more floor area, but you have to do something dramatic and beautiful with it. And those are the kind of deals that we're not comfortable making in Boston yet. We don't want to give that much authority to an authority.
That's Mike Davis. He's an architect and principal at Bergmeyer Associates in Boston. I'm also joined by Brian Sermon, an architectural historian and lecturer at Boston University. Let's hear from some of our listeners, and you can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Janice is calling from Arlington. Janice, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much, and thank you for taking my call. I don't know, I'm a traditionalist, I guess. I moved out here over 40 years ago from the Los Angeles area, and I was struck by how historic, I guess would be the word, Boston was at the time. I really hate the tall buildings. This is Boston, not New York. Or New York City, and I don't like the fact that the newer buildings that are going up, the rent charges and the purchase prices are just unbelievable, and only the very, very rich can afford to rent or purchase, which means the people who are traditionally living in the city are being pushed out.
Janice, I want to thank you for your call. Brian, I want to turn to you. As we go through these periods of growth in the city, how does that play in the economics of it, and how does that consideration factor into architectural planning for Boston?
Well, I think economics are certainly reflected in what's built at any given point in the city's history. I also think that caller is right to point out the relationship of new development to Boston's historic architecture. Certainly, we don't want to sacrifice our historical heritage at the altar of new development. But I think that the city has to grow. It has to progress. No one in Boston that I know of wants to be living in a museum. And if the city doesn't have new development, it's going to wither on the vine. But I think it is possible for these new buildings to be sensitive to their historic surroundings, and I think that we do justice to those pioneers in Boston's architectural past when our new buildings reflect that same concern with quality and with innovation and design.
It's an old example, but the Boston Public Library still seems to resonate. You have half of one style, half of another. Mike, does that sort of sum up the issue for Boston, that a city that cherishes its history so much?
Yeah, well, I agree that that we don't want to live in a museum. We don't want to live in an artifact. I think Boston is changing. I mean, there's a whole different population in the city now than there was generations ago. There is it's an entirely new economy, new cultural forces at work here. And Boston is a progressive city. We've always been a progressive, inventive, revolutionary, innovative city. That is in Boston's history, I think. I think all the old buildings that you see now, they required a great deal of imagination and a great deal of creativity to make them happen. And I don't think we can turn our backs on that. But I think the caller actually, there's a couple of different points in that call. And you have to completely agree that affordable, transit-served, mid-rise urban housing is critical for us. And I think that's why I say let's get to the objective qualitative understanding of the shared public goals and how architecture can support them. That goal is not going to be met in downtown Boston. It's not. But it is going to be met where it is being planned for right now by the BRA in places like Washington Street, Forest Hills, Augustin Square, and Jamaica Plain and Dorchester. And that's where we don't see this because we don't, they're not in the newscast, but that's where the really interesting, really creative architecture is happening.
Let's take another call. Jim is calling from Roxbury. Jim, welcome to Radio Boston.
Welcome. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
What I'd like to say basically is that the board, the BARA, seems to be voting in lockstep in approving projects that, are rubber stamped, because some really irrational things have happened around here. And I can see downtown and in Roxbury that projects are clashing with the social and physical environments. There is an inflation that's sweeping through. What was considered a middle-class person is a poor person nowadays. And also, there seems to be no real plan for development here. And it's hurting us. all types of things are disappearing, like parking, for example. And, you know, I think that they need to start all over again, because it's sort of taking the path of the big dig, if those who are on the highway will relate to.
Okay, Jim, thank you for your call. Let's take another call. Greg is calling from the Boston Preservation Alliance. Greg, what's your view of this balance between old and new as we enter this new wave of construction in Boston?
Well, it's a balance that we're dealing with every day, and it's a challenge. I mean, I think it's been said already in the discussion that, you know, historic character of the city is so key to what Boston is. And if you look at the sort of economic benefits and why people are coming to Boston to live, work, and play, the city character is such an essential part of that. But as also has been mentioned, I mean, the city has always evolved. It will continue to evolve. To try to pretend that's not going to happen doesn't make sense. So how do we balance this new and old? You know, we're often saying that some of the most interesting places in the city are where new and old play together well, and I think that's critical in the design. And it's true, a lot of the design has been timid. People have been trying to figure out how to strike that balance, and I don't think we've succeeded very well. But there are great opportunities, but there are also several missteps along the way, as has already been said. But it's a tricky balance, and the pressure, given the value of real estate, is a big problem. Every little postage stamp at this point is of great value, and it's driving lots of demolitions in the neighborhoods that are really changing historic character. And we're looking forward to continuing working with the BRA, and hopefully this new effort at some larger planning will help.
Greg, thanks for your call. Brian, it sounds like Greg's echoing some of the things that you were talking about earlier when you're giving examples, that there have been some creative moves to tie old and new, but there aren't always those opportunities when you're looking to put a new 60-foot, 60-stories or more skyscraper into a city.
Yeah, it's a tough balance, as the caller just pointed out. And I think I'd go back to something Mike pointed out earlier, and that's development not necessarily in the downtown core, but out in the neighborhoods. I think there are some prime parcels out in the neighborhoods that where developers and institutions and companies can build without necessarily constructing a new 1,000-foot skyscraper downtown. One example that comes to mind recently is the Fenway area. There is a neighborhood that 15 years ago, driving down Boylston Street or Brookline Avenue, all you would see was single-story fast food restaurants, parking garages, parking lots, and now you have these great mid-rise buildings that have created a new neighborhood, great for residents, great for visitors, with all the amenities and transportation there. Also, the air rights above the Mass Pike extension, I think that's another great opportunity. The Alston Rail Yards. There are these opportunities to develop these underutilized parcels outside of that downtown core.
Mike Davis, I want to turn it to you. As we look at this stage of development, one of the things that came up in the conversation earlier about the troubles at the Boston Redevelopment Authority is this sort of lack of comprehensive planning. Do you see a real concern in this immediate stretch here where they're not totally under control, they're still working out their problems, but development's forging ahead while the economy is on the upswing?
Yeah. First, let me say that I think that the report we just scanned the executive summary, and I think there are a lot of really good recommendations in the report. And I think that the director has a clear focus on what the authority needs to do. You know, we on the commission are sometimes in the difficult position of having to review projects without enough planning context yet. You know, and that gives us pause. You know, we say, can we bring someone in from planning to please, you know, help us understand the context for this project? And that's kind of a sinking feeling. But you know, because public policy really drives. Policy drives planning and zoning, and then planning and zoning drives development. And if you're working in the absence of clear public policy, then yeah, it's a bit you're kind of a bit out on a limb. You know, but I think, as I said, I think the recommendations, I think the audit is good. The recommendations are good, and I think the authority is heading in the right direction now.
Let's go back to the phones. Jerry is calling from New York. Jerry, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, I'm a native Bostonian who's lived there many years, but now I'm in New York for job purposes, but I will be returning shortly, I hope. And I'm just calling for the historical side. I think the classic wonderful thing about Boston is its historical aspects. Otherwise, it's just like every other city in the United States. And so many people that I meet here love Boston for that very reason. So I am really will be saddened to see huge high-rise buildings being put everywhere downtown. And the thing that really prompted me to call was the comment about the Shard. I would never want to see a Shard in Boston. So I think that's one of the ugliest buildings I've ever seen.
Describe that a little bit for us. Describe what a Shard looks like, Jerry.
It looks like a shard of glass, just jutted up into the air. And London is much different. A lot of the big buildings in London are down at the Canary Wharf side of the city. So they don't hover over the beautiful old portions of London that people love. They're all crammed down in a place where a lot of tourists don't go because we don't want to go there.
But, Jerry, I want to thank you for your call. We're short on time. Brian, before we wrap up this segment, I want to ask you with your historical perspective, are you optimistic about this next wave? Do you think we'll be talking glowingly about it as we move forward?
I'll say I'm optimistic that Boston will retain that historical heritage that so many of the callers have already talked about. Boston has a long history of being on the forefront of historic preservation. So I'm optimistic about that. As far as what kind of architecture, what kind of new development we get, I think, as I said before, Boston's at a crossroads right now. And I'll be interested to see, looking back 20 years from now, whether the city takes the road towards more quality, internationally renowned architectural design, or whether it's more banal, more mediocre, more, as Mike said, relentlessly B-minus architecture.
Mike Davis, very briefly, optimistic about this wave of development?
Optimistic. I want to send the callers to look at two buildings. Go down to Dudley Square, look at the Bowling Municipal Building. Understands the context, you know, relates to, respect to the context, but then makes something very contemporary happen, very modern happen. It works with the old stuff, but it's definitely...
And your second example?
Out in South Boston, 315 on A. I mean, 315 on A is a big, tall rental apartment building. It could have been, you know, a very disappointing project, but...
We're going to have to leave it there, Mike, but thank you for your thoughts. That's Mike Davis, architect and principal at Bergmeier Associates. I also want to thank Brian Sermon. He's an architectural historian and lecturer at BU. Brian, thank you.
Thank you.
And stay with us. State Auditor Suzanne Bump will weigh in on the Pacheco Law. I'm Doug Tribou with Anthony Brooks, and this is Radio Boston.